Good afternoon, everyone. It is now 1 p.m. Today is March 7, 2023. I want to welcome all of you to the Los Alamos County Board of County Commissioners work session. Today we are going to be meeting under the County Operational Plan. At this time, I want to ask all of you to rise for an invocation given by Commissioner Luis Lopez and the Pledge of Allegiance by Commissioner Tony Hanks.
Heavenly Father, as we gather here today in your name, we thank you for the opportunity to do so. We ask that you keep all of our first responders and our firefighters in your protection of this upcoming fire season that we will be entering. We ask for this protection in your Lord's name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioners. Roll call, Mr. Donica.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yep.
Commissioner Hanks.
Here.
Commissioner Fujisawa.
I am here. Approval of the agenda. Do we have any changes to the agenda?
No changes, Commissioner.
I will entertain a motion.
Move for approval of the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yes.
Commissioner Hanks.
Yes.
Commissioner Fujisawa.
Yes, thank you so much. Going to go into item 2A. County Operational Plan, Mr. Joe Laviona, and I want to extend a sincere welcome to all of you here today. And certainly, as we go through the presentation, I would imagine that if there's any questions at any point in time, this is a work session, this is your meeting, our meeting. So if there is anything that need arises to ask a question, please proceed. Welcome.
Thank you, Laviona. We should probably do introductions. So
that sounds really great. Absolutely, right. You bet.
So again, Joe Laviondo, I'm the battalion chief for DFPC.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Shannon Byerly. I'm the Southeast District Resource Coordination Battalion Chief for this area. So first time in a meeting here. So thanks for having us.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Christine Coleman. I'm the South Region Field Manager for DHSCM.
I'm Joe Richards, I'm your new emergency manager for Los Alamos County.
Dave Becker, I'm joined by fire.
Matt Norton, deputy fire management officer with Washington County District 311 and Acting
Demo. Good morning, everybody. Tom Eikenberry, I'm the FMO for the fire management officer for the Comanche National Grassland. We have a good chunk of ground over there by Kim and along the Purgatory River. Sorry,
there it was. Alfonso Montoya, fuels AFMO in the San Carlos Ranger District for the U.S. Forest Service.
Good afternoon, Dennis Page, FMO for the San Carlos Ranger District, and Desi Chapman, our district ranger, did pass along that she was unable to make it, but appreciate seeing the invite.
Thank you so much.
Phil Martin, Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. Derek Navarrete, Sheriff, Los Alamos County.
And with the county,
Christy Culbery, Finance Director.
Tony House. Welcome again, Felix Lopez. Luis.
Hello, Tony.
All right, well, thanks again. This is our 2023 operating plan meeting, and we kind of shifted the name a little bit. We did last year. It used to be an annual plan. That would require signatures every year, but we got a new master agreement in 2021. That's a five-year agreement. So we were able to build our operating plan around that master agreement. And because it's a five-year agreement, you know, our plans are now 5 years. And there are no proposed changes to the plan for this year. So that plan that we signed back in 21 is still a good plan and will be for the next few years. We have the ability to change it if anything comes up and we need to, but there really aren't any changes for that. So any questions about the plan itself?
No, and thank you for sending that information early on. We have had an opportunity to go through most of the documents, so thank you.
Okay. So we'll just go through some of the normal documents that we have every year, and the funding guidelines are certainly one of the biggest ones. This is the 22, but there aren't any changes to this document for 2023. And essentially what it is it's the resources that are potentially needed on an incident here in Los Alamos County. The mutual aid period is either midnight of the first operational period or as far as midnight of the second operational period. It's the mutual aid time period. And that depends kind of on the severity of the incident. It's a big going fire and we're gonna, you know, be on it for multiple days. You know, we might choose to end the mutual aid period at midnight of the first day because we're going to state responsibility. We can bring in other funding and incident management teams, or if it's something that might be short-lived that we catch today and maybe do some mop-up tomorrow, we have the ability to maybe extend that mutual aid time period to the end of day two. So that's kind of what we're looking at when we're talking about the mutual aid time period there. So essentially all of the resources in green are available to be ordered by the local fire chief or in unincorporated areas by the county sheriff. And it's essentially a lot of the things that we can't get here already. I mean, engines typically show up from the local cooperators. The county's always been super helpful with, you know, road graders or other heavy equipment and county water tenders. And it's, you know, it's the modules, it's the aviation resources. And so the very large air tanker that is available, it just requires some additional approval from my leadership. They've never not approved the use of that if it's the right tool and is actually here and available, then that's an opportunity as well. We get in beyond the mutual aid period. Some of these things might still be available for reimbursement. And the reason that is because the MPC has, we have some engines, we have some modules and some additional overhead. So maybe we can bring our folks in and help over that extended attack time period. So anyway, so again, this is really unchanged for 2023.
So, Joey, and I don't know that we have anyone online, but can you describe the difference between the large air tanker versus the very large as far as capacity?
Sure. So a single engine air tanker, they're going to be the smaller ones. They typically are called seats. And you know, depending on the altitude, they might be able to hold in the range of 600 to 700 gallons of retardant, perhaps, or water. You get into a large air tanker, they could be in the neighborhood of maybe 2,000 gallons. A very large air tanker could go maybe 15,000 to 18,000 gallons, potentially larger. So, so those are the different sizes that we're looking at when we're talking about, you know, a very large air tanker. You know, if it's in more mountainous country and some of that difficult terrain, those large air tankers are very large, might be a little more difficult for them to get into that country. But out on the eastern plains, it might work really well because they can, you know, maybe potentially put down a half a mile of fire line or more depending on the fuel type. And so they could buy us a lot more, you know, suppression capability perhaps than a seat. Seats are typically readily available or more readily available than the large air tanker. So it just, it depends on the season, what's here and available to us, and we can make decisions based on that. So any questions about the funding guidelines? Okay. So for 2023, this is kind of our wildfire resource summary. Again, we've got 14 regional battalion chiefs all around Colorado set up into four districts. We have four deputy district chiefs and then four district chiefs. They're located all across the state. There's a map attached to this. I'd already emailed everyone the map. And then that's our duty officer number. So if there's a request, if there's a fire going and there's a request for state assistance of some kind, whether it be for me, because we're looking at potential state responsibility incident. You can certainly call me direct, but if you can't get a hold of me, the duty officer can make contact and then send, you know, whatever the county is requesting. The state still has our two multi-mission aircraft. They're located in Centennial. They can provide a lot of support with, you know, fire size and the perimeter. It can get us some mapping. Can kind of look out in front of a fire and see maybe what structures might be there, what might be threatened, and then it can also provide hot spots or locations where the fire is much more intense than other areas. And so we still have those. Those are available all year round. The state contracts up single engine air tankers that we talked about earlier. So we have one on contract now, and then the second one coming on in early April. State also maintains contracts with two Type 2 helicopters, so like a Huey helicopter. The one in Canyon City out of the Fremont County Airport is on contract now and available, so if we do get some sort of a wild land incident, they're available if that's the right tool. They can also assist the county with search and rescue as well. Those particular aircraft are outfitted with hoists on them. So we do have, you know, a hoist capability, which could be of some use for search and rescue things as well. So that's available. They're on a 230-day contract, so it'll run through, you know, late this fall. Montrose is the location of the second aircraft, and it'll come on there again, you know, early April, roughly. And then we have various engines and modules or small hand crews around the state as well. The state does contract a large air tanker, and what's kind of unique about this is that most of the large air tankers around the country are under a Forest Service contract or a federal contract. What that means is that wherever there's significant fire activity, whether it be here in Colorado or in other places in the West or around the country, those large air tankers can get relocated, you know, to somewhere else farther away from here. So during that 120-day period, by the state contracting a large air tanker, it's here in Colorado available for us. It's not going to get moved to California or New Mexico or anywhere else. And so that buys us a little extra time. I mean, those large aircraft they're fast, so they can get here quickly. But it's just some extra insurance for us as a state, knowing that if we have that need in the state of Colorado, we've got one here available to us. And then we just maintain some other call when needed aircraft, and essentially what that means is we can call them when we need them, but they could be called by somebody else that they have another contract with, and they may not be available to us. The other ones are what we call an exclusive use, which means they are here exclusively for the state of Colorado and for our use. So any questions on our resources for pretty much the same as last year? But
I had a question, more of a question I have for you. If you've had a chance to meet with our new emergency manager, Mr. Richards, along with Christy, and had a discussion on how this process, how we engage with Division of Fire.
We did speak on the phone. You know, we'll meet in person again and have some additional conversation. I do understand that, you know, Derek and Phil are working on, you know, more of a robust search and rescue program in the county, and so certainly meeting with those folks as well and letting them know what's available to them from us for search and rescue, you know, how to order those resources, which is a little bit different on the search and rescue than on fire.
You know, I ask is we're really close to fire season.
Yep.
And Joe being new to the county here, I want to make sure that he is prepared and any resources needs from you.
Absolutely.
Or any type of dialogue or communication
yep.
skills or anything he needs, because, you know, I've done plenty of these now over the years. I've been baptized by fire.
Sure.
With our spring fire a few years ago and the other ones we've had in Los Angeles County. I just wanted to make sure that Mr. Richards had the opportunity to have discussions with you and your teams and your staff on what his role would be here, and plus he knows what his role would be through our
yep.
county office as well. So.
Sure, yeah, again, we spoke on the phone for a little bit, and I mean, we have some more dialogue to go through, and I guess maybe get more into the specifics. If we have an incident, this is what it's going to look like and some of that, but we have exchanged information and we'll...
Or as much reading material as he can possibly handle.
I'm sure, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, you know, one question on the fires that we have had in Colorado, and we don't want fires anywhere, right? But when you have a contracted hanker that is actually in conversation with another state, i.e. California, how do they prioritize that? I know we had a huge fire going on in Boulder
yep.
a couple of years ago, and so one of the comments that we heard after the report at the county commissioners group statewide is, was there sufficient response equipment? And again, the question was not for us, but it was kind of an update. So how do you secure that? I mean, they're already here in Colorado. they're fighting a fire, but then they get called out to California, per se.
Sure. You know, that's a, so the country's broken down into regions, and they're larger chunks of country. And so there are regional managers, there are national managers, and a lot of those resources that are managed by the federal government, again, a lot of the large air tanker contracts are maintained by the Forest Service, and they prioritize largely based on the values at risk. And so if we've got a going fire out here and there's another significant fire, like the Boulder one, for example, and we might be burning a lot of, you know, grass or grays or open country out here, for example, and there's another fire that starts where there's a lot of homes or there's critical infrastructure that's threatened by a new start, we could have aircraft here working an incident for us, and they get called away to what would be then called a higher priority incident. And a lot of that is based, again, on the values that are being threatened by that particular incident. And so in the annual operating plan, there's some caveats in there about when you order aviation resources for a wildfire, the information that the Pueblo Interagency Dispatch Center is going to need when you place that order. One of those critical items are the values that are at risk with this particular incident. The dispatch center doesn't know if it's burning in, you know, eastern Los Angeles or potentially western Los Angeles. Are there homes or critical infrastructure or not? And, you know, if there's nothing else going on, then we can pretty much get the resources that we're requesting. If it's a really busy fire season and there's a lot going on both in the state or in our region, the Rocky Mountain region, or even in the western U.S., there becomes more of a competition for getting some of those, you know, federally contracted resources here to help. And again, that's why the state has said, okay, that's fine, we understand that process, but to make sure that we have access to more of the resources that we need, again, a lot of the helicopter resources are the same way, other than the two that we contract. You know, the state did purchase a Firehawk, essentially a Black Hawk helicopter for state use. It's hopefully going to be delivered later this month, later in March. They're going to need some time to work on that aircraft and get used to the aircraft, so they're hoping that it's kind of online and ready to go by mid to late May. But that particular helicopter, again, it's the largest of the helicopters that you can order, so it has more water capacity, we can put more people in it. And again, the benefit to that is that will be available in Colorado 365 days a year, obviously weather dependent. And so, so again, we realize that, you know, a lot of those national resources can get moved around. We might think that we do have significant resources that are threatened, but there could be another fire that has more than what we have. And they're most of the time potentially going to get some of those resources. So again, the state's leaning forward and contracting a lot of those things, so we know we have access to some of the stuff we might need, and regardless of what's going on in the region or in the rest of the U.S. So. I did send out this document. You know, it has some specifics about the multi-mission aircraft, you know, when they were purchased, some of the legislation involved with that, you know, what they can do for us, their capability. So certainly when you have some time, you can move through that document itself, and it answers a lot of maybe some questions that folks may have about, you know, what it can do and some of that. So there's a request form that goes with that. So this is a PDF version of that. There's also, you know, another, you can go to the state website and order it through that, but it fills a lot of, again, the information that they need, ground contact, where they're going, you know, some of that kind of information, so the aircraft gets going in the right direction. It can be ordered through, you know, the Pueblo Interagency Dispatch Center or through our duty officer as well. So, so there's some information on that. And then COIMS is just a data management program. So when the multi-mission aircraft is flying and collecting all of that data, COIMS is the program where all of that information is going to go. So when you want to look at a map, you want to see where that fire is or get the perimeter, where the hotspots are, a lot of that information is going to be pushed into the COIMS program. That program is available for anybody to get a username and password to access, the sheriffs, the fire chiefs, know, certainly yourselves included, if that's some information that you want. There's a lot of valuable information there. You can see what's going on anywhere in the state. You know, typically in a busy season, it's flying almost daily, or both ships are. So if there's a fire, maybe, you know, outside the county to the east, and you're concerned or curious about, you know, what that fire's doing or where that fire's located, you know, getting into this program and having access to that data can provide some of that information for you. So certainly just, you know, send me an email, or certainly let me know, and we can get folks set up in that COWIMS program so that they have access to all the data that that aircraft can provide for us.
I think that'd be relevant for Mr. Richards to have access to.
Yep.
So he can update us on the issue. As a commissioner, yeah, it'd be nice, another tool, but then so many tools in our toolbox.
Yeah.
I might forget, but I think that'd
yep.
be great. And for Mr.
Yeah,
Richards,
absolutely.
Well, for Richard.
How is the state of Colorado? I attended a national conference in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and one of the conversations that was one of the breakout sessions that I attended was doing a survey of states for radio frequency accessibility. Has the state of Colorado done that, and are there any dead spots within Colorado? And right now, the through the
in Colorado,
yeah, one of the grants available is through repeater towers, so on and so forth, broadband accessibility everywhere. I don't know if we have that, but one of the things I did ask the question to see, can you tell me, and this is in Washington D.C., where is Colorado at? Do we have, can we identify some dead spots? Because we don't want to send any firefighters in those areas and not knowing what's happening in there. So right now, the State Office of Broadband, you might be working already with it, may have some dollars available. Specifically here in San Luis County, we have so many, as Commissioner Lopez, as you know, dips and valleys and so on. And if there's anything we can do from the county level, we'd be more than glad to support and assist grant funding for this particular issue.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I can honestly say that there is not 100% coverage in Colorado for broadband or for VHF communications or for 800 communications. I mean, that's just the nature of the topography, right? There are a lot of areas where we do have good service, but then there certainly are areas where we don't. And, you know, that's really not much in my wheelhouse. I would certainly, there would be more questions for, you know, the local dispatch center here, for other dispatch centers around Colorado that certainly have maps that can show what's covered and what's not covered, whether it be VHF, whether it be, you know, the 800 communications, and certainly that. So there certainly are dead spots for that.
And there actually has been some work in the South region mapping out specifically DTR coverage and where those dead spots are, so we can get you that documentation. It's been a couple years now, but there really hasn't been any infrastructure build out since they were done, so I think they'd still be accurate, but I could get you those documents.
And that was one of your biggest problems out in the Kim Farm area over the years, the fires out there, is just no communication. So when you guys send teams down in there, very, very dangerous at that point. So has that improved out in that area? Do we know? No?
Not that I'm aware of, but what we do have available to us, certainly, we have mobile repeaters or repeaters that we can bring in and set up on a high point. It's not a location that we might maintain a repeater there all year round, but we can certainly set something up largely for VHF. You know, the 800 system is much more complex. But the other option that we do have, and we utilize quite a bit, is we'll use human repeaters sometimes in those situations where we can put somebody in a vehicle or hike somebody up onto a hill where they can then have communications over the other side and be able to communicate that way. And so, you know, certainly one of the basic concepts, in at least in wildland fire, is, you know, lookouts, communications, escape routes, and safety zones. And if we don't have communication, we need to get that established before we're putting folks or having folks engage in some of those areas. And you could move from one area where you had it, you know, maybe chasing a fire, into an area maybe where you don't have it. And so it's just something as firefighters that we try to train early to have that constant and continual communication. And when you don't, look at ways where you can develop that communication again, whether it's a human repeater or, you know, we're going from a repeated frequency to maybe one where we have line of sight, which we can do for the DTR system and some of the 800 frequencies. And so there are some workarounds with that. But yeah, it definitely is something that we experience, you know, fairly often in wildland fire where we don't, we have a hole where we can't communicate, but we do some things where we can bridge the gap.
And I would think also our sheriff probably has access to some of those, even that through the radio communication on their vehicles, you know, so pretty much identify.
Sure.
We'd like to see that map personally.
Okay.
Yeah, so is there any programs that we can go through your office to, like Commissioner Lopez said, to help assist in that and getting grant funding or moving forward that you know of?
Unfortunately, there hasn't been a tower or infrastructure build-out grant for some time. So we're watching for that. I think the last one was C-Wins, C-Wins, Wireless Interoperable Network System, that we were able to get several million dollars in the South Region, but it's been a while, so no, not right now.
Good point. I'm sure there probably are out there, but again, it's probably identifying the needs on a local level and then who's really, you know, whose is it going to be communication wise and then, you know, getting the right people in place to apply for the grants and but
erect the tower and take ownership. It's a long process.
But yeah, good questions.
And the DTR towers, it is a little bit more complex than the VHF. So, I know that the eastern part of Los Angeles County has been, and the wind generators were part of that conversation in the initial build out. There was some interference with that. And I think there's been some work done on workarounds with that as well. So, you know, it might look a little different now than when they were first building that infrastructure.
And I'm sure you guys are doing a tour of all this district here, so other county will be meeting with you as well, or that they haven't met with you yet on their own operation plan. So maybe that conversation will be brought up to maybe cohabitate one county to our neighboring county,
sure,
let's say Baca,
yeah,
and Otero, and it is in this region to assist communications for the remote areas, especially out east, so
yep,
far out east.
And that 109 area.
Yeah,
that would be good.
I'm not aware, but we can certainly have those conversations and try to pool the resources. I mean, there's limited resources, right? And so,
well, we always wait to the last minute, Joe, and then we got fire and we got no communications, and here we are talking about it again. You know, maybe it's something we need to start addressing, you know, sooner than later.
Sure, absolutely.
And what we can do with Homeland Security and whatever grants are out there, what Phoenix was looking into as well.
Sure.
Because I sure hate to see somebody get hurt out there because we couldn't communicate. And I know your safety first, of course.
Sure.
But, and then on the assessed evaluation side of it, as a commissioner, that's where we get our funding mechanism from our revenues from our pill money from our mill levies. So I understand why a plane will go to another area where there's more homes and structures that will be damaged. But when they pull it out of Colorado and take it to California, well, Los Angeles County has those structures still, they're still going to be decimated if there's a fire or the other county. And then our assessed evaluation for our assessor's office behind you there goes down, our revenue goes down, and then that lady over there is cold, he's like, we don't have the money to do this. So it's very integral what I'm getting at.
Yep.
The performance that we have, that we can do our best ability, and how's helping you to prevent those catastrophes.
Absolutely.
So, and the communications, like I could tell my wife, come on.
Right. Yeah, again, you make very valid points, and it's, you know, it's up to us, and, you know, and those first resources that are out on scene to really do the best that they can to, you know, to identify what those critical values are and to get that pushed up as quickly as we can. And again, it's nice that the state's been able to fund some of our own resources that we know it will at least be in the state. You know, again, maybe, you know, Boulder's burning down again, who knows, or some other critical infrastructure. You know, there's large watersheds in Colorado that's critical infrastructure as well. So maybe it's not burning homes, but it's burning, you know, landscape that could affect millions of people's water down the road. And you know, so it's very complex when it comes to figuring that out. But as best as we can identify, it gives us more opportunity to get
and over the years, it has increased 100 times full for my first year as a commissioner to have been the second or third year when the state would come in and Christie, your office would come in immediately within 24 hours and assisting us in our fires with hazard. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
I want to kind of take a little bit of a tangent, but totally related. There was legislation passed in 2022 to designate certain ponds and watersheds for firefighting purposes. So, Mr. Richards, here in Los Angeles County, we need to call a meeting with all the fire districts. There is a process by which we need to establish, I don't know if you have worked with other counties, to designate those ponds and or watersheds specifically for, because otherwise they're going to be restricted.
Right.
As Commissioner Luis Lopez says, you know, we're going to have a fire, but then there's water right there. Well, you can't touch it because it has not been designated.
Right.
That's what the legislature has done in the last couple of years, that unless it is designated, so I've been, let's follow up on that and call a meeting of all the local fire districts, along with our fire marshal, our sheriff, to begin to designate those. I have had, on the western part of the county, one or two landowners that have called and said, you know, we have water in my property, can you, you can use it, but there's a process by which we need to go through now. So, you know, it wasn't like before, well, there is my lake, go ahead and take water from there, and certainly it's complicating the day-to-day activity just at that.
It is, you're right, I'm aware of that legislation. In that legislation, it said that the Division of Fire Prevention and Control would write the rules for what ponds designate and known, and I know that we are in the process of writing those rules. They have to be of certain size and certain depth, and you know, if it's a small water hole that we maybe can't access with aviation equipment or can't get vehicles to, we might not be able to get a designation for that particular one. But there are quite a few out there that we can designate. So I'm aware of that process, and you know, we can certainly meet with, you know, with the chiefs and at least pre-identify what ones we want to take a look at, that we need to go through that process of, you know, running through the rule process and then getting those ponds designated for future use.
Those ponds that you designate, they'll be multi-purpose ponds, right? So that the rancher can still use them.
Sure. Yeah, and there's lots of, I mean, we're always good about, you know, we know how critical the water is. And just because it's designated, you know, a pond that can be for fire use, doesn't really still give us the right to just come in and take that water as we see fit. And, you know, so we do a good job of tracking how much we take, and we can certainly work with the county or work with that landowner to either pay them for that water or potentially replace the water that we've taken through various means. And,
And I think,
yeah, I mean, most people are, I mean, if there's a pond there, they're probably watering cows off that pond, yeah, most likely. And they still need that for the rest of the summer and through the rest of the year, so.
I'm gonna go back and read the legislation, because I know we worked pretty hard on passing that as for dual purpose.
Right.
But I believe that the crux of the legislation is to replenish the water that was taken out of there. So keeping an inventory of what was taken out and replacing it back.
Right.
And there was another question that came up at one of our meetings in Denver. How is there a restriction bringing water from one county to another county, i.e., and also if New Mexico, we're thinking about the fire that we had in Colorado down on the Frisco Canyon, right?
Yeah, above Lake Lamoille.
Yeah. Right, so the water coming from New Mexico into Colorado, are there any restrictions on that you know of? And not, also from one county to the other county?
Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I think some of the restrictions could potentially be if there's, you know, maybe some sort of a noxious weed or something in a particular water source, and we don't want to spread that somewhere else, then obviously we would restrict that water, and some of those ponds have certainly been designated. But if the water's okay to use, then I'm not aware of anything that where we couldn't share from one county to the next, or even from, you know, across state lines, okay, that I'm aware of.
Well, with that fire that happened up there, Chief Backrack was on that with us at that time, and I believe the Rateau Fire Department did in kind, the state of New Mexico wouldn't even get involved, if I remember correctly, for that fire. It was about 4 years ago, I guess.
Yep. Right.
And so, you know, the connections that Chief Backrack had over there, I think, would have assisted. But as far as sharing resources, other than the 24-hour...
You know, we've made some strides with New Mexico. You know, we definitely have had some fires that have crossed the state line and got very, very difficult. But we do have an operating plan like this. We do have one with the state of New Mexico. Colorado, New Mexico has an operating plan. And so through some of those incidents where we've struggled in the past, we've definitely made some strides. My understanding is that there's a new district forester for the Northeast District there in New Mexico. She's just reached out, so we've exchanged information, and so we're definitely better than what we used to be. It can sometimes be a struggle to get the state of New Mexico on board with their Forest Service and doing that, but again, we've made some strides.
With the Union County fires we've had over there, on the county line, I think their motto was "Burn, baby, burn." Back then, they would have. You know?
Yeah, and there's even some longstanding, I think, just gentlemen's agreements, because there's a lot of, you know, mesas that are in Colorado that drop off into New Mexico and vice versa. And, you know, some of those fire districts along that northern New Mexico boundary, if they can access it, even if it's in Colorado, then they will do so. But if it's in New Mexico and up on a mesa that they can't get to, then maybe Kim or some folks out of Baca County may come down and kind of fight fires up on the mesa. So there's some of those agreements already in place. I think on the district and department level, it's fine. It's when it gets large and gets to the more of the state level that, and again, the sooner that I know about those things, the sooner that we as a state can reach out to New Mexico, have those conversations and try to make sure that, you know, we get the fire taken care of and we worry about some of that other stuff, you know.
What can we do to help? We have Commissioner Felix Lopez just coming off as CCI president, past president, and Tony Hasnow as a member of the executive board. This board of commissioners has some influence at the state level through Charlotte counties. The perfect opportunity for anything you can come up with that we can assist with them and the state level to work with Mexico, because, you know, it was 7 years ago and those fires that we're having over there, and Commissioner Matt Loudon and all of our ranchers out there, they were just, what are we going to do?
Right.
You know, and there wasn't much we could do. And that's why I said it's gotten way better since then. But the state, New Mexico and Colorado, I think, if now's the time for us to help you, Joel, and Christy, with the leverage we have at the state level, now's the time.
Okay, absolutely. No, I certainly, you know, I appreciate that. Again, you know, every situation is different, right? Every incident's different. And again, I think we've made some strides, but we can certainly maybe talk offline too a little bit more about that. And if we run into that, then maybe we can leverage some of that. If we have a big incident and New Mexico's being a little bit more difficult to deal with, then we certainly have options for other channels to try to, again, foster more of those relationships and be out in front of it. So.
Hey, Joe, real quick. You know, we have some property down, well, Forest Service, down on the New Mexico over the country. We'd certainly like to be a part of that discussion, too.
Yeah.
Sure. We, you know, our relationship with those folks were pretty good. They went not so good now. We're trying to rebuild that.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, one thing that, that, we met with Senator Hicken Looper. He came to Trinidad a while back, and one of the things that he was calling upon, and we encourage him to do this, is to have the Western United States Senators Conference to talk about water, fire, and all the things that are really happening. So he did say that if they haven't had it, they're about to have this Western Senators Conference to really bring the states together, to take some of that bureaucracy and level the playing field where communication is gonna be there. So, and I left actually, we exchanged a couple of comments. Keep us posted, because if there's anything that at the county level we need to know, is that what happened to that communication and what happened to, because, you know, the US Forest Service, New Mexico, Colorado, I guess it doesn't matter. But then you have that geographic line that at the end of the day, one governor may say, well, you know, yes, but. And so I think that's where the communication has to keep on. Really great point.
Yeah, and actually you say it doesn't matter, but kind of in a weird way it does.
It does.
I hate to admit, because like Colorado's in Region 2, the Rocky Mountain region, and then Mexico is in Region 3. They don't really talk that well with each other. Oklahoma's in Region 8 or something. And it's kind of weird, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think what I meant is a fire is going to cross over.
It doesn't care.
So the fire doesn't really care, but to us it matters because we know how do we respond to that when you're talking two different state lines.
Yeah. And who's going to pay the bill? If you have to call in a large tanker to put it out, and there's already a discrepancy over the state line, like the Bear Canyon fire over here, then you're going to run into those problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's two different dispatch centers based on that state line as well. And so it starts in New Mexico, then one center's communicating with another one, and we're ordering resources in Colorado for that same fire that a different interagency center is ordering for on the New Mexico side, and so it can get convoluted pretty quickly, but.
And I'll just jump in too. On the emergency management side, we operate with EMAPS, Emergency Management Assistant Compact, and it's basically a state-to-state mutual aid agreement. And for a long time, New Mexico was not a member of EMAP, and most states in the United States are. And I actually have made a note to check because I heard they were working on joining the EMAC, but I'm not sure that they have. So I will check on that. Another thing that we do is a five-state conference for emergency management, and that's an annual conference, which is Nebraska, Kansas, New Mexico, Colorado, and one more. Maybe it's a four-state. Maybe Texas does participate in that. So we meet annually and talk about, you know, non-fire but all hazards types. Disasters across state lines. So there are some things that are happening too, but it definitely could be stronger.
Well, you know, and along the way, we also had an opportunity to meet with our congressional delegation in D.C. and asking them to appropriate the funds to mitigate the forest here in western Colorado. I mean, that has been neglected forever. And the appropriation shouldn't be that big of a complex issue. I had a conversation with our congresswoman for the 3rd Congressional District, and of course she gets it, and the message was going to happen, but at the end of the day, it's going to have to go through the Appropriations Committee so we can actually get those dollars here in Colorado, because we have so much down timber anywhere in the western part of the state of Colorado. Here in Los Angeles County, go to Monument Lake, and I mean, I drive there, and I praying all the time, hoping that it never happens, because it's just a matter of
truth.
And so with that, also the state legislature is working on creating some really tough building codes, land using codes for anybody that lives on that part of the state. It's gonna be the wildfire, urban interface. So what that's gonna do is our homes, for those of us that live on that part of the state, are going to have to be retrofitted, meet a certain level of a resiliency, if you will, protection, the shell of it. So
hardening.
Yeah, the hardening of the shell. Sure. But can we stop a 1500 degree fire with a metal roof? You know what I'm saying? It may detain it, it might, but at the end of the day, it's communication, and we're throwing money all over the place, but I think the forest deserves a great portion of that money as well.
Does anybody, you guys can speak to that a little bit more? I mean, I don't follow that maybe nearly as much as Dennis or I, but.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to add is the work that we did where we met you last year at the Cubechar area there. We burned all those piles that you saw there, so we burned about over 4,200 piles in there over the course of 6 weeks, somewhere in there. And the full treatment, that treatment from where the forest, what it looked like originally, all the way through burning all the piles, that was less than 6 months to get that work done. And so that's a Joint Chiefs project. And I know you're all aware of what that is. And so we're looking to continue that up along the Purgatory Road, down there up towards the Purgatory Campground, and then even more up along the Cordova Pass Road. This morning we actually toured that area and came down 12 from Cubechar Pass, and yeah, I I also appreciate your comments with the potential down there. There's not much snow down there. I was looking at the snowtell site, and I mean, we're sitting right around the 2002 snowpack season, which of course we all remember 2018, but 2002 was a really dry season too. So I also echo your comments and think that one thing to add, I mean, I think this meeting is very important, but really, I think there was a good quote that I saw recently that said, the emergency is now. When the fire starts, it's too late to mitigate. It's time to respond, and what do we do for it? So with limited time, with limited resources, with limited options, what do we do? And those treatments need to be in the right place for the right reason to prepare us for that next fire instead of random acts of treatment across the landscape. In one particular area or another, we need a whole series of these options for us for those future wildfires.
So is anybody out there, are you involved in those WIG conversations? Are you part of the 21-member board that
nobody, that
and you guys are the experts, and somebody here needs to be? That bothers you.
So one thing that we're proposing is at the county commissioner level, one thing that we don't want the governor to do is to appoint someone that, because they know someone that knows someone that knows him. We want to have experts on this rulemaking board, because you know the example that when we visited Cuchara, I mean, I tell you one thing, we brag about that all day long because it is something to be proud of. Wouldn't it be awesome to see that? And instead of spending the money, I'm not going to get into my politically charged box, but elsewhere, we can use that here in Western Los Alamos County, in the state of Colorado. We can certainly do that. And I think we're neglecting. So what Commissioner Tony has, that right now, that we are working directly with the senator that's carrying the bill and has been very responsive to that, Senator Carter, which we'll give her a big shout out, because one of the things that we want is have a type two board where it's from a recommendation from your local officials, to have someone that has the expertise, that understands that when you light a match, it's not just a smoke a cigarette, right? It could really lead to so many more things. So, but that's one of the things that we are really.
So who in here wants to be on that board? Number one.
But we really do need someone. I think I'm going to submit your name. That's definitely something that.
Make sure you sign up before you leave here. Dennis, quick question on the slash piles you guys burned. I think I mentioned at that meeting in Cuchara, working with the health department. Were you able to reach out to Kim Gonzalez with the health department during the periods of burning, or was it not necessary for any type of smoke?
We did contact the county health, contacted the department, CDPHE, and we contacted both Virgin Oak County and Los Angeles County.
So, yeah, okay. As a board member of that group, if they didn't get in contact, I'm sure I would have heard about it by now, but thanks for doing so. And then if you continue on this side, make sure we keep Mr. Joe Richards in the loop for when that's going to occur, especially because that's Phoenix's district and he's going to get a lot of phone calls for fires and stuff like that. But in all seriousness, on that group that we're working on here with us, there needs to be professional fire folks on this board of directors moving forward, because again, you can spend all the money you want protecting the house, but how are you going to protect it if there's fire on top of it falling down on it? You're not, you need to mitigate the forest.
And the one point that we keep bringing up ad nauseum is that, and we're, Los Angeles County is a demonstration of this, one size doesn't fit all. So what's good for Boulder and the mountainous area up there is not necessarily the same as what's going on in Kim and Branson. You know, it's a different type of fire that you'll be fighting. And we're trying to eliminate the blanket approach, and maybe they could tailor it to fit the geographical areas, because we've done that here with our sheriff and our chiefs. They all have to call in their districts, and we have what, 5-6 districts in Los Angeles County, because we recognize that they're not the same. But they can't do that for the state.
Joe, this is your meeting.
This is great conversation. I mean, we have the right people here to have this conversation. So,
We're walking away with a sign-up sheet, and Dennis's name is going to be right at the top.
But no, you bring up a valid point, and I certainly do my best to, you know, I mean, there's value in grass. I mean, when you're feeding cattle out here, if you don't have grass, then, you know, what does that cost at the end of the day? And just because it isn't a home that you can rebuild probably much more quickly than maybe you grow grass. And so I certainly do my best to push that forward, if you will, to try to get the same level of response in, you know, southeastern Colorado as we can provide, and maybe some other places. So, you know, I've tried to do that over the years of being here, and will certainly continue to do that, because I know what the value of that is. And like you said, sometimes it's hard for folks further up the highway to have that same understanding. So I'm finished with what I have. So, you know, Dennis or Matt can certainly pick up from there. So
I'll go ahead. And one thing that I'd like to mention is, you know, the lack of fire is one of the biggest things that we're paying for now. My agency for 100 years, over 100 years, said no fires, and that really bled out to the states, you know, through the Smoky Bear. We funded a whole bunch of the State Forest Service funds, 40% or so. And the message we sent was, and we said, you know, with strings attached, right, wrong, or different, was, you know, all fire is bad and we need to put it all out. So what we're paying for now is really that deferred maintenance, and with that, we're paying interest on it too. So instead of having the low intensity fires that we historically would have had down in some of those lower elevations, we're having high intensity fire because we have so much fuel buildup out there. So the interest is really the place where it becomes really hard to pay, because on that backside, mitigating the watershed, trying to stabilize the soils and so forth, takes a lot of money, and usually way more money than it took to suppress the fire. So I think one thing I would go back to is, I think it's a balanced approach. I think it was mentioned here earlier, but some help on the structure side, because, you know, as the federal agencies, we have no jurisdiction on private lands, and yet we're asked to protect those. When a fire comes, we bring in an incident management team. There are some risks, obviously, that change when you get into the wildland-urban interface versus out in the forest. So a balanced approach, a cohesive approach of both treating the private lands, making sure that some of those homes that are hardened, because the majority of homes actually burn down due to embers, the ember wash that hits those homes, they find the little crevices, get in there, and then the house a lot of times will burn from the top down where it gets up in the attic. So treating the forest and managing that private land and the values on those private lands are really important. And I'm sorry, I'm going to circle back to the one answer that you had before about prioritizing fires. So I think Joe did a good job explaining it. Maybe that next step is at that state level and at that regional level, we have a multi-agency coordinating group, and that includes DFPC, includes BLM, includes all other land management agencies. And basically they meet and say, when the conditions arise to a point where they have multiple fires, they say, okay, what's the priority going to be? This fire in the region? And usually what happens is, it's that initial attack, so that when those fires first start, because if you work on all these fires that are blowing and going, you're going to have another fire that starts that you get to move that to the tally of another big fire movement. But we also move resources around the federal agencies based on fire potential to not just response. If we see that one area, one geographic region is drying out, we'll move resources there to reposition them so that we have that quicker response. I think I'll end there, other than we'll be continuing to work. Thank you so much, both for all the multitude of groups in Los Angeles County for the Purgatory Watershed Partnership projects, and then also the Joint Chiefs support as well. And we expect to continue those into the future. So resource-wise on the district, we have two assistant fire management officers, one engine, one hand crew, 10 person. Hopefully we can hire all of them, and then a prevention officer as well. So that's what we have for the year. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question for you guys. If you're familiar with, I'm part of a commission for the Front Range Passenger Rail. You're familiar with that as of yet? It was a bill passed 21-238 for a Front Range rail from the Wyoming border to the New Mexico border. We're in the process now, and the reason I ask, I don't see any fire personnel, and it's all pretty much board members and railroad members who are non-voting members of this group. But as this group moves forward, and Joel and I were talking about it recently, about sparks off train earlier today, which started the track fire in Mexico years ago. Do we need to have you guys at the table with this organization? Would you recommend, and who would we go through to bring that? Because I have that board meeting up and coming soon, and we haven't even touched base on it, so I'm glad you're here today to kind of remind me of this rail, because as this legislation is moving forward and the board is being convened and all the pieces are being put into place, it will eventually come to a vote of the district. The district's going to be all the counties up and down the I-25 corridor to pass a voting measure, a ballot measure for revenue for this project, including with the Federal Rail Association or administration as well. So I guess my little background on this, my question is, do we need to have fire division of Colorado at the table on this moving forward? In the preparing, we do have a group doing a study on it, and have you guys been invited to be part of that study as of yet that you know of?
I would have to check and get back to you on that. I don't know, it's not something that I've heard that we've been involved with, but that certainly doesn't mean that we aren't. But I'll check into that certainly.
High speed rail loves sparks. You know, so please reach out to me when you find out.
Absolutely.
And then I can put you in the right contact personnel for our director.
Very good.
Yep.
Anybody else?
Matt hasn't said two words today.
Not a lot to add. I'll just touch on our resources that we have for this season. We've got quite a few holes in our organization currently. John Margulis recently departed to head over to work for Forest Service on White River. So he's departed just recently. So like I said, I'm acting behind him, but obviously that creates more holes. We are in the process of filling our wildfire operations tech in our office. That should be selected this week. We do have a menu captain vacancy and an assistant menu captain vacancy that we hope to fill this year as well. So a handful of vacancies, but it seems to be a common problem for most folks, not just in fire, but everywhere. Fremont Sea Base, last I heard, was still planned to have the permanent infrastructure taken down. Not sure when that is going to occur. They want to keep it available for a mobile retardant base if and when we need that. The public tanker base is going to be up and running, as well as Colorado Springs tanker base. And so those two tanker bases will be able to fulfill the needs of most of the southern Front Range of Colorado. But in the event that we need seats a little bit closer, maybe along the way down, a little bit further south, we do have Fremont Sea Base as possible ability for a mobile return base. And that's all I have, unless there's any questions.
Christine, do you have any?
You know, the only thing I was thinking about was the discussion on the infrastructure, and that's one piece that pre-work that can be done through emergency management in coordination with all the partners. But I've seen, and I know Wareville County has a pretty extensive list of, DTR towers, pipelines, rail, power lines, and just knowing exactly where everything is and ownership of those, and then also digging into, are they insured? Are they insured under an umbrella? And not only does that help on the response side, and this list can be pretty extensive of that infrastructure, but it helps on the response side, being able to really quickly have access to where all these things are. And then on the recovery side as well, if you've lost this infrastructure and then we need to bring FEMA into that, it's not out there trying to figure out what it is. It's pulling up a spreadsheet or a program that has that in there to already have that. It's a pretty limited time to turn on some of those FEMA programs. So that's just something I'm sure I'll be talking with Joe about and another.
Another assignment and homework.
Right.
Yes. Dennis, do you know if there's a data later for Los Angeles and Corpus?
Yes, there is.
There is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's typically the FCC data layer for communications towers. That'll be in there, and then pipelines, et cetera, will be in there too, along with electrical.
You, the structured data go in there as well? Would it be beneficial to?
Yeah, I believe the structured layer for Los Angeles County was completed in 2020.
Okay.
And I believe there's a GIS layer in that wildfire precision support system too. And sorry, I'll take this on one other quick point on the communication. The Spring Creek fire was a great example of what happens when you're not prepared. And Huerfano County had done a lot of work on all of their repeaters, but they hadn't looked at one that was at the top of the pass between Huerfano and the west. And that repeater tower burned down, and I had some really good pictures of the impact of that. And the impact of that burning down and being damaged was that the DTR was unable to communicate between the San Luis Valley and the other side, the Huerfano side. So Huerfano County's gone around, not only inventoried those sites, but also done mitigation to try and reduce the chances of those towers burning down or being impacted by fire, so that they could withstand even that direct pinch of the fires. Anyway.
I think that gives us a great opportunity to do an inventory and assessment and see if there is any opportunity to upgrade the infrastructure that we currently have on those towers. If the opportunity, I mean, I believe the grant dollars are accessible and available, probably can help us get to where we need to be to avoid what you just mentioned. Yeah.
And don't we assist in the accessibility to the road and bridge, Phil, getting to those towers?
Yeah, we've got one, two, three.
Four? Yes, four. So yeah, don't be afraid to have your fire chiefs in the region, Sheriff Navarrete, reach out to us if they have a need for anything for road bridges, and get up there for accessibility, those tires for maintenance, or for whatever else we need to do.
Well,
I'm offering.
And again, this is such a wonderful opportunity to pre-plan, but thank you, Joe, for bringing all this information to us and for all of you joining us here in Santa Luis County. And I know that the mutual aid from one county to the next, we all want to avoid a fire, but when the fire is there or any kind of a catastrophic event, we are there to support each other. And I tell you one thing, from the perspective, as Commissioner Luis Lopez mentioned, when I served as president of Colorado Counties, what an amazing group of individuals you have throughout the entire state. I mean, all county commissioners, we're just one phone call away from another. And there is a really good perspective, because we are on the ground. We are the first line of communication to our constituents. And I really had a just humbling experience getting to know every county commissioner, where in most instances, we left aside our party affiliation, and we came what's on the best interest for our constituents. There are some times that we just have to rise up to the level of that, but 99% of the time, it is an amazing group of elected officials at the state level, and what an honor to be able to observe that, because then we have communication, and now the networking for us statewide, it's there. And now Commissioner Tony Haas is on the executive board, and so certainly we have an opportunity to work together to make a difference for those people whom we serve. So if there is no one else that has any additional comments, I want to thank you all. We want to thank you for being here with us today. And once again, stay connected, and thank you for all the work that you've done with your team.
Thank you
so much. Commissioners, anything else? I will entertain the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joel, thank you. I'd rather be like this.
Because to me, all this is more.